Thank you both for very interesting presentations. My question is for you, Jeanette. Have you any idea how the results of your research can be used in hospital care?
No, because this is new.
I ask because you said that philosophical care is medicine for the soul, and I would like if the patients in hospitals could have care for their souls and not just. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's a special training from Norway. That's 2.5 year training. And I do suggest that we have something like that, that we use the applications. And what we do, I mean, this is, as I said, this is brand new, but this is what we investigate. I work as an ethics consultant for the neonatal intensive care unit. That is brand new as well, but it's a different kind of application. Something coming from philosophy or bioethics, medical ethics, it isn't applied to, this is for patients, not patients, but the patient's parents, like the premature baby's parents, and nurses and doctors. But it's not something that we see very often in Denmark. It's something we see all over the world.
Maybe the concept is new, but the question is very obvious, because you ask for the normal life if something is normal.
Yeah.
Just as life is bad and good, and I think people in all times has talked about their life. It's a healing process.
Yeah.
And that's not new.
No. But it's the actual application of
yes. It's from your platform where you are speaking as a philosopher.
Mm.
But could a nurse, could a doctor, could a...
Well, that's the discussion that you're having within the community, the philosophy. And I think that yes and no, that's a long debate.
Yeah.
I think that our philosopher's materia medica are two things. One is the different philosophies throughout history, so that you are aware of the different, all the different ways of thinking that has been going on throughout history within the West. Two, it's a specific way of reasoning philosophy that you know yourself. It's a special way of thinking that you can apply. So this is all you learn a little bit about that. One question or one comment that I had was linked to your comment, in fact, because you were investigating what exactly do you mean by existential. And the first speaker was very particular about, well, it's Heidegger. And you said, well, there are many, many different forms of existential thinking. And that's exactly my point. Where, so when I sit among these people, I don't have one particular philosopher. I have this kind of 2,500 years of thinking that I can use, but I'm not necessarily using just one. You know?
Yeah, of course. So really, it's a bottom-up question. Yeah, in the way that you said it's the clients or the patients themselves who is coming up with the questions.
Yeah, oh yeah, they decide what questions they want. I have absolutely, I'm just, you know, there as a moderator and a facilitator. I have, with my background, I can ask them certain questions that will bring out the philosophical aspect more. So I'm sort of like acting as a devil's advocate, but also throwing, you know, particular questions at them.
And still you have your philosophical backpack on your...
Oh yeah, yeah, and I use it quite a lot, but I don't say, oh, this thought I have now is coming from Nietzsche.
No,
because that's exactly...
That wouldn't work.
it's not interesting to know that I have based this question on a particular philosopher. Because often people will shut up and you know, they won't think.
No, and it wouldn't have something with their life.
No, not at all. No.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting.
Mm. That's true.
Mm. I was... when you gave the numbers of the participants and 26 women and 7 men, of course the question arises, is this kind of Socratic dialogue for women? And it would be a question that could be asked to me too. What I have seen, this kind of interpretation of illness, this idea of what to do to get healed or to improve. Mm. To what extent is there a gender perspective on this? And are we just looking at a female ways of approaching illness and recovery? And
We talked about that at the Cancer Society, and they told me that, in fact, I had more men than they had in their counseling sessions with the psychologists. So this could also be because this is so new and nobody really knows what is it. I don't even call it a Socratic dialogue group. I just call it a dialogue group. Mm. And then eventually that turned into the philosophers group. But I did not pick that that name. But it became that at the society. So this, and they actually told me that they believe that maybe more men would be interested in something like this because it's so thought-based, reflection-based, and it's not necessarily, you know, emotion-based. But we'll see. So far, there is definitely more women.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that it is important to be aware that. That we don't idealize ways of making interpretations of illness or ways of having dialogues about recovery or whatever, and create this feminine universe, this feminine therapeutic psychological universe that makes it the good way of interpretation and the good way of dealing with and so on, so that these, as far as I've met them, mostly men who says, well, now I am sick, there's nothing to do about it, and I don't want to talk anymore about it. I just want to return to my life and proceed with that until the end, and we will have no discussions. That is a great way of handling things, but quite different. And I feel today with Gabriela's story, even if it was her father, I'm sorry she's not here, because I wondered what would her father say to her interpretation of his process. That's an interesting question.
But
I think it's important that we know that who are we talking about, and that we don't set up ideal ways of coping and handling and
definitely, and this would be very anti-philosophical if you did that. And this is certainly not for non-academics. So mm-hmm. if you think that, well, I'm not going to join a group like that because I can't really, you know, mm-hmm. match, it's a completely non-academic way that we're mm-hmm. approaching it, and there is not one way. And I think that people won't sign up if they're not interested in it.
We've got two more people who would like to join in the conversation for a second here. You want to go ahead?
Sorry.
And then you can follow right after he's finished.
Thank you for interesting presentations, all three of you. I guess we've been reflecting on this, but questions are always normative in some way. Well, we have any comments on that, both on your method and in the research work. It's a matter. When I come back to Norway now, people ask me, what was the conference like? Was the beer good? There is an assumption that I actually was at the conference, and which I've done.
Well, I would say that this method, and I would say that mm-hmm. I'm just trying to develop different methods that are constructive for these the existential needs that we do see in patients. This is one way. And this particular method is definitely questioning the preconceived opinions that people have about whatever issue that we're dealing with. It could be the good life, or so assumptions are not taken for granted. They're cut in pieces. You know, so they're opened up and looked at, well, what exactly, why do you think this way? Why do you say this way? Is it consistent? So let's have a look at the thinking behind your assumption. To question the normative aspect.
I understood your question, but a little different, yes. That you said the questions that you ask, the two of you ask in your studies, they have implications. That was what you say. And that's quite true. And I have reflected on the strange thing that, as I told you, I came to this from history, that is, from behind, if you see it chronologically, and asked for this idea, this concept of sin and redemption and so on. And I guess that, of course, it guided me, and it made me see things in modern patients' interpretation of illness that I would not have seen if I had not asked this question, of course. And it was only that I noticed that, oh, well, what they are doing are memory work. So I didn't go for memory work. I looked for the perception and construction of sin, and the other things were what came off that, if that was your question. Yeah.
Okay. We'll take your question next, and then the last question will go through there in the center. And then right after this, of course, is a break, so you can continue as long, but we'll just take those two questions and then we'll let people go along.
Well, I'm
not
so good to English, but I'm not Danish either. But I think gender is the issue. Because you, this one, Simon, I don't know if you know. Simon.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. And he says that men are like elephants when they get sick. They leave
the herd.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really true. And when you read about it, men is often they die and mortality is higher with men or women. So I think really that's a very interesting thing.
I don't know. I've only had six dialogue groups, and it's just too early to say because nobody nonsense or what. You know, so we'll just have to see. But it's definitely interesting.
Yeah.
See if there is a
because all, I'm lost too, so I can see and see.
Yes.
As,
yeah.
And another thing I was thinking about for the first she is talking about to live is the death is a process, and I think it's very scary to think about that in our world we are thinking about to help people to die if it is a process to each other close the life yes, to peaceful. So we do something only.
Then we'll close the last question.
Yeah,
last two questions. We gave
one
him too long to think.
No, I'm just thinking about the good dialogue which you have. If I understood it right, is that what you would call it high spirited people in a way? They know clinical depression and things like that.
No, but they don't have a clinical depression,
ah.
But they're in despair.
They're in despair.
Yes.
Is it correct? If I understood right, it seems like it goes through a deconstruction and a reconstruction phase in their own philosophy. In a way, philosophizing, in a way that they can talk about dialoguing about something, they can come to new conclusions.
They can't come to any conclusions. It's
they can't
still,
come to any.
No, it's even not. What they can get is insight. Insight into these issues that we are looking at, but they don't come to any conclusion.
Oh.
I mean, this is philosophy.
No,
I don't recognize that. What I do recognize is that often they will either change their mind, or they will have, because of this insight, they will have a highlight in awareness of the question, and suddenly that question has mutated into other questions. So they come back, you know, because it's five times that we meet, and it's over 5 weeks, they can come back and say, oh, I've thought about it, you know, some more, and so it's over a longer period of time when they get a chance to really digest the question.
Okay. All right, well, and the other one. I'm finished. Where was your research from? Was it Tromsø or something?
Tromsø.
Do you see any worldview of this? Is the only worldview in the world?
I didn't hear your question, I guess.
In the worldview you see,
mm-hmm.
Was there anything about, do you see in your concept, you talked about a kind of secular scene,
mm-hmm.
Do you see any, this, the, what is it called, this is the end. This is the end.
Okay.
Do you see some of their concepts in that?
No, and I just tell you that the patients are registered in Tromsø, Norway, but it is both Norwegian and Danish patients.
Okay.
They have been recruited from Kræftens Bekæmpelse in Denmark and in Norway and Scleroseforeningen and other patient organizations. So they were not from the area of Tromsø.
Okay.
Because then I guess that there would be some much more traditional concepts of sin and redemption and so on.
Yeah.
But I didn't meet any of that observation.
Thank you very much. I'm sure those of you who would like to stay and continue the discussion are welcome to do so. Or the dialogue, I should have said, instead of the discussion.
The dialogue is so long.
Thank you.